Okay, it's now being recorded, Jan.
Okay, great. Thank you. And I just have one disclaimer to read from the Joint Commission when we're recording anything that involves the speaker from the Joint Commission, and that is this presentation is current as of September 19th, 2017. The Joint Commission reserves the right to change the content of the information as appropriate. Okay, so we got the business part out of the way. Again, we're going to be welcoming Scott Williams. We have a survey, Joint Commission survey report from an NACBH member, and the announcement of the committee's new name. So we have those three agenda items. Does anyone have anything else to add today? Okay. Well, Scott, again, welcome. I think everyone received the PowerPoint, a little background information on the Joint Commission Standard CTS 030109. And I would just like to briefly, I think you received the bio for Scott Williams, who is a doctorate in psychology, and he's currently the director of the Department of Health Services Research at the Joint Commission. He's been instrumental, I believe, in setting up, you know, doing the background work on this standard. And he's published in the New England Journal of Medicine, Circulation, International Journal on Quality in Healthcare, and Psychological Reports. So he's been at the Joint Commission since 1998, and I think he comes well equipped to help us with this new standard that is going to be effective on January 1st, 2018. So with that, Scott, I'll welcome you and turn it over to you.
Thanks. And just, I'm not sure how this works logistically with questions, but if it's appropriate, please feel free to interrupt. And I'll take questions as we go, or we can wait till the end. But I'm not sure how this works in a conference call, not face-to-face, and being able to see whether somebody's trying to get into the queue to ask a question. So,
Right. We just jump in. So thanks for your flexibility.
Right.
Okay.
No problem. So what I was asked to do is really talk about the revised requirements for standard CTS 030109, as well as the rationale behind it, identify some resources that can help with identifying tools or instruments, discuss a little bit the criteria an organization should be considering when they're identifying the metrics that might best fit their population, and to talk a little bit about how this change is expected to improve the provision of care, treatment, and services. So with that, let me talk a little bit about the standard. The standard was originally written as the organization assesses the outcomes of care, treatment, or services provided to the individual served. That hasn't changed. What has changed are the elements of performance associated with it. So where it used to read, the organization monitors the individual's progress in achieving his or her care, treatment, or service goals, we've added some text to that to make this a little clearer in terms of what we're talking about, which is the organization uses a standardized tool or instrument to monitor the individual's progress in achieving his or her care, treatment, or service goals. We've added an EP, which is the organization gathers and analyzes the data generated through standardized monitoring, and the results are used to inform the goals and objectives of the individual's plan of care for treatment or services as needed. And then we've modified what used to be the second, now is the third element of performance, from the organization evaluates the outcomes of care, treatment, or services provided to the populations it serves, and we've added the text, by aggregating and analyzing the data gathered through the standardized monitoring effort. So what's the rationale behind this change? What we're really hoping to do is to encourage the monitoring of individual progress. The standard itself is a longstanding requirement, but it really did very little to provide any direction for how to go about doing this. We've also increased an emphasis on an evidence-based practice of care, which is referred to as measurement-based care. It's also referred to as outcome-informed care or routine outcome measurement, which is something that has grown in the behavioral healthcare field, and it really helps to provide a direction for the change to the standard. So SAMHSA, the Substance Abuse Mental Health and Services Administration, has recognized measurement-based care as an evidence-based practice. But I would point out that it's different from many other types of evidence-based practices which are listed in the SAMHSA data set, primarily because it's not a model for treatment. It's not a model for the provision of services. It's not focused on a specific condition or population. It's considered something of a meta model, which is designed to complement the work that you're already doing, rather than serve as a replacement or as an alternative to that treatment or service model you might be using. There's a mounting body of evidence. It's almost 20 years old at this point, that outcomes can be significantly improved across a really wide variety of behavioral healthcare settings and populations when measurement-based care is incorporated into it. This shouldn't be all that surprising, given that what we're really talking about is the use of an objective and valid measure to assess progress and to use that feedback to make adjustments and improve care as you're engaged in treatment or service. So the revision of the standard is really focused on the key elements of measurement-based care and on using the data to help organizations know whether what they're doing is working for the individual that they're currently serving and working for the organization as a whole. So it emphasizes continuous quality improvement at both the individual and the organizational level. So I'm going to get into some specifics and examples in just a second, but I'll take about 60 seconds just to mention the approach we use to actually revise the standard. So it started with a fairly extensive literature review to ensure that the revision was based upon evidence and to understand the value of using standardized tools to monitor progress and outcomes. We convened a technical expert panel consisting of experts in the field, and the TAP members were actually very supportive of this effort. We conducted a field review. That was a six-week review open to the behavioral healthcare field, and respondents supported generally the use of a tool or instrument, but they also raised some concerns about how to implement or comply with the standard. So we then held five focus group calls with a number of the field review respondents to really discuss their concerns about implementation and compliance. And we then used all of that information to make final edits to the revised standard. It was approved in November of 2016. And the field was given a little over a year to prepare for implementation, which will begin on January 1st of 2018, so next January. So if you're looking for more information on the rationale about the standard, you can go to the Joint Commission's website. If you click on the tab for accreditation and then behavioral health care, you'll see a link in the left sidebar to something called New Outcome Measures Standard. If you click on that, you'll get a whole bunch of background material, including the document that I sent along with the PowerPoint. So with that as background, let me get into some specifics. So one of the key messages that we heard from the field review and the focus groups is that a lot of organizations wanted some guidance about selecting an instrument. So what to look for and some examples of instruments that would meet the requirement. So to address that concern, on June 1st, the Joint Commission posted a list of instruments that could be used to meet the new standard. And again, you can access that link by going to the website, the Joint Commission site, or to go to a website called manual.jointcommission.org/BHC instruments/webhome. But again, easier to get there if you just go to the Joint Commission site, go to the Behavioral Healthcare Accreditation tab, and you'll be able to access it through links on that site. So a couple of really important points about this list of instruments. First of all, the Joint Commission doesn't endorse any particular instrument, and the list really isn't intended to be exclusive. So there may be other instruments available. In fact, there are certainly other instruments available that aren't on this list. We asked the instrument developers, owners, systems associated with those instruments to post descriptions of them and how they're used to help our accredited customers identify instruments which might be useful and suitable for their patient populations and settings, but not every instrument developer came out and posted a description. So if you are looking for additional resources, there are additional lists posted, and I'll talk about those in just a second. But on the Joint Commission site, once you access that list of instruments, what you'll see are there some search tools built into it. If you click on the filters button, you're able to search for instruments, for example, that might be specific for a particular age range or population. You can search for instruments that are related to particular type of testing, whether you want to be getting self-report, whether you want parent or guardian information, whether you want information from teachers, whether an instrument is proprietary or non-proprietary. Once you select those filters, or if you don't select them, that's okay too, and you run the report, what you'll get is a list of instruments that have been posted by the developers or owners or people authorized to post information about those instruments. And you can click on any one of those instruments that comes back to get some more details about it, including contact information. So if you want to reach out to that instrument developer and understand more about how much an instrument costs, how you use it, whether it's appropriate for your population, you can get in touch with those measurement developers yourselves. If you want to go beyond the Joint Commission list, we certainly recommend there's a journal article which was, I think, really well done. It's actually a whole journal dedicated to talking about 10 very well-established and frequently used instruments or suites of instruments. I should point that out too. Some of the listings on the Joint Commission site actually include multiple instruments. So it may be a measurement system of sort that can provide you access to a whole library of instruments that you can use. And it's really about setting up a feedback system that allows you to use the data that's being collected and select which instruments are appropriate for which patient or patient population you serve. So there's a lot of information there. I certainly encourage you to look at it. You can also get information from the Kennedy Forum, which is a advocacy group focused on behavioral health care, and they have a PDF document that lists a whole bunch of different types of measurement-based care instruments and the types of settings and age groups that they may be appropriate for. So ultimately, what you should be looking for when you select an instrument is a tool that has well-established reliability and validity. You want to make sure that that tool is sensitive to change. In other words, you want to know what's real change versus noise. You know, in any instrument, you're going to see variation from administration to administration. You want to know whether that change is due to actual change or whether it's just due to that normal variation from administration to administration. The instrument should be appropriate for use as a repeated measure. So the approach to administration and the frequency of administration is going to vary based on the instrument you select and the population you serve. In most cases, a tool should be able to provide you with some normative data that can be used to discriminate between populations that may or may not benefit from services, if that's appropriate. This is the equivalent of a clinical, non-clinical population, healthy, non-healthy functioning, typical, non-typical. And I understand that, at least among this audience, you're primarily dealing with services that are directed to children and adolescents. So you'll want to be sure that an instrument or instruments that you select are appropriate for the population you serve. In some cases, you may want to collect self-report data directly from a child or adolescent. In other cases, you may want to gather feedback from parents or teachers or others who are in a position to assess progress, or you may end up doing both. So keeping those criteria in mind, I'll mention a few of very useful metrics that are useful in their own right, but don't meet the requirements of the revised standard. So a measure, for example, that assesses the use of evidence-based care or clinical practice guidelines can be very useful, very helpful, but it in and of itself does not address measurement-based care. You can't use that information to assess an individual client's progress. A perception of care instrument or a patient satisfaction survey. Again, may be useful, and there are similar kinds of instruments which may assess therapeutic alliance or may assess satisfaction with care, which can be used to adjust care, but in and of themselves, they're not measures of progress or outcome. A measure that might look at medication treatment compliance, again, may be very useful, but it's not measurement-based care. It doesn't tell you how well a particular patient is responding to that treatment. and then an assessment of outcome after the completion of services. Even if it's comparing a baseline score to a subsequent point of measurement, intake to termination or admission to discharge, 6-month follow-up, something like that. Those are really useful measures to have, but they don't give you an opportunity to actually adjust care or monitor care during the service or the treatment that's being provided. So before I move on to the subject of actually using the instruments and complying with the standard, I will address a couple of pretty common questions. First of all, do I need to use an instrument that's on one of those lists? If that's not clear already, the answer is no. You don't have to use an instrument that's on the Joint Commission lists or either of the other two lists that I mentioned. Does the Joint Commission recommend a particular instrument? Again, no, we don't. Whichever is the right instrument for your setting, your population, and the kind of information that you want to gather. Perhaps the most frequent question we get is, can I use a homegrown instrument? The answer to that question is maybe, but it's not really recommended. There are some organizations who can pull that off, especially if they're part of a system that's been using an instrument for years and has tested that instrument and knows that it meets the criteria that I just went through. But it's hard to do that on the fly. So be very careful if your organization is moving in the direction of using a homegrown instrument. You need to make sure that you've established the psychometric properties of the instrument, that you have established its sensitivity to change, and it's appropriate for use as a repeated measure. So let me pause there for any questions that you may have about selecting an instrument, and then I'll get into a little bit about how compliance with the revised standard is intended to improve the provision of care, treatment, or services. All right, so no questions so far.
Yeah, we're with you.
All right. So in terms of using the instrument that you select, generally speaking, in measurement-based care, data are routinely collected at multiple points in time, hence the use as a repeated measure, and they're collected over the course of service or treatment provided. The data are typically collected at the first contact, and then at regular intervals, depending on the population you serve. So each subsequent point of contact, every nth contact, weekly, monthly, it really depends on the population. And as I mentioned before, since you're treating children and adolescents, the instrument or instruments you select might include self-reported data from a child or adolescent, or they might include data collected from parents or teachers or other sources. So each point of measurement is providing an opportunity to assess progress by comparing that individual's current scores with their past scores, by comparing that individual's scores with the instrument's norms, and by comparing actual progress to expected progress, which can be done by using a statistical model. So if you're using an established instrument, you will likely have access to that statistical model or the normative data that can be used to help you evaluate whether a particular client is on track or is at risk for a not successful outcome. So after the data are collected, they're analyzed and delivered to the service provider as a form of objective feedback. The analysis can then be used to inform the goals and objectives of treatment, monitor individual progress, inform decisions related to changes in individual plans of care, treatment, or service. It can also be used to identify individual cases that may benefit from treatment team discussion or supervision. So I'll use an example here. Let's say you have you've selected an instrument and the scores on that instrument range from 0 to 100. And let's assume that a new client's initial score on that instrument is a 44. So based on the instrument that you selected, you should have some idea if that score, 44, is good or bad. In this case, let's say that the clinical cutoff for the instrument is 60, and that lower scores tend to represent more difficulty. So scores that are higher would indicate healthier functioning, scores that are similar to individuals who are not seeking services. A score of 44 is below that clinical cutoff, so in this case, the client would be similar to other individuals who are seeking services. Some instruments also provide subscores that can help with benchmarking risks associated with suicide, substance use, other particular areas of social emotional functioning. So you may want to consider that as you look to select an instrument as well. So as many of you know, one of the most frequently scored standards is related to setting goals and objectives and monitoring progress or adjusting client goals and treatment plans. So given everything I just talked about related to measurement-based care, especially when the instrument includes self-reported data directly from the client, I'd certainly urge you to consider how you can use this information to set goals, treatment services, and identify that one of the goals for services may be to help the client progress to a level that's above the clinical cutoff. So we want to see improvement, and depending upon the instrument you select and how you analyze data, you might be able to calculate an expected rate of change based upon that client's initial scores. In other words, you can see whether a patient is on track for improvement. You can see whether there's a margin of error around that. Some systems will provide thresholds around a predicted line of improvement or a projected course of improvement over time. And even without those expected change instruments, you can rely on the parameters of the instrument to help set goals and monitor progress based on the reliable change index of an instrument and on that clinical cutoff. So does the client progress to a point that's reliable, you know the change is real, and does that change push that client past that clinical cutoff line? The other thing you can do once you've accumulated all that data about not just this individual client, but all of the individual clients that you're serving, is that you can aggregate that data. So if we assume that an individual clinician has had multiple clients, you can aggregate all of that data for a single clinician over some period of time. So for that clinician, you can calculate a scorecard looking at the average number of contacts that that clinician has had with clients, the modal number of contacts, the average amount of change that each client has achieved, the average change per contact, and the average number of contacts that are necessary to achieve reliable change on whatever the scale or instrument you're using is. You can also use a statistic that's referred to as an effect size, which is a way of measuring in the aggregate pre-treatment and post-treatment scores while accounting for the variation in the initial and the final scores. So obviously from clinician to clinician, the severity of clients that they're dealing with may vary, and you want to include that in whatever analysis you want to do if you're going to compare clinician performance or any performance in the aggregate. So by rolling up the data at the clinician or organization level, the data through these standardized instruments can be used to really inform quality improvement priorities. So you can aggregate that data at the clinician level or along service lines or treatment teams to help you prioritize where you should be putting your quality improvement effort. You can also evaluate progress on an organizational or unit level to see if the amount that you're investing in training and retraining of clinicians, adopting a particular evidence-based practice, you really should have some way of objectively measuring the impact of your investment. And by calculating all of this data, using all of the data that which you're required to collect with the standard, you should be able to actually evaluate whether the quality improvement efforts that you're engaging in are having the impact that you're hoping they will. So the revision of this standard is really looking to improve care, treatment, or service by promoting the use of data as a routine part of care. We want that to happen at the level of the individual served, about helping organizations know how well this individual is responding to these services at this particular time. And the standard also emphasizes continuous quality improvement at both the individual and organizational level. So the emphasis on continuous quality improvement is really what we would consider to be a distinguishing feature of Joint Commission accreditation and of the behavioral healthcare customers who are seeking and achieving accreditation. So we feel like this is very consistent with the Joint Commission's overall approach, and we're really hoping that this adds some additional guidance to that standard, which really wasn't scored very frequently, partly because it was so vaguely defined in the first place. So let me stop there and see whether you have questions about requirements of the standard, the rationale, resources, the criteria for selecting metrics that best fit the population served, or using the data to improve the provision of care, treatment, or services.
Scott, this is Jeff Gentry at Clarity Child Guidance Center in San Antonio. I have a question for you. We've talked a couple of times. I'm wondering, this standard is effective January 1 for behavioral health care and not hospitals. And we have both behavioral health care and hospital. I was just wondering, can you say anything about the rationale for not having that requirement for hospital?
That's a good question. I think it's something which will eventually find its way into the hospital standard, but it's primarily a result of the way the Joint Commission accredits, because we have the two separate programs, and the behavioral health care accreditation line was sort of ready to make this move, whereas I think they were feeling like it wasn't the right time to do that for the acute care setting. Like I said, I would expect to see this change occur.
Okay, just one
follow-up. At some point in the relatively near future, yeah.
Do you see, and maybe I should bring this up offline, but is there any reason not to go forward with the hospital for an organization?
If it were my facility, no. I think... just because it's not required as part of the hospital accreditation manual, I think the evidence is really clear about the benefits of this kind of an approach. And I would start by applying it at the hospital level, especially if you've got an integrated system. I might look to find an instrument that cuts across those settings so
we're
that you can actually monitor progress.
We're looking at the outcome rating scale right now. We have their demo and... So it looks like it could serve that purpose. So, all right, thank you very much.
You bet.
Okay. Scott, this is Jan. Just wondering, this is effective January 1st, 2018. What will the surveyors be looking for if someone has a survey, you know, very close to the implementation date?
So let me try to tackle this in pieces here, because I think if you were being surveyed on January 2nd, the expectations might be a little different, although, again, there's no reason that an organization can't get started earlier than January 1st.
Right.
The first sort of questions that a surveyor is going to ask are, what instrument did you select? What instrument are you using? Help me understand how you made the decision to select this instrument. The surveyor may ask questions about, you know, what decision process was used to make it. Do you have meeting minutes to talk about, you know, why your leader selected this instrument? How have the staff trained on the use of the instrument? Really, how is it administered? And is it being administered according to the approach that your organization has adopted? So are you doing what you said you'd do?
Right. Okay.
The next thing they're going to look for, and again, this depends on if you're surveyed January 2nd and you just got started on January 1st, there probably isn't going to be a lot of data. But as we move forward in January and February and March and so on, as a surveyor does their tracers, what they will look for is there evidence that the instrument is being used?
Okay.
Are there records in the chart that indicate that the patient has or client has repeatedly taken, you know, the instrument? It's been administered multiple times.
Okay.
If that's the case, has the data been used? You know, is there evidence in the chart to indicate that the clinician has actually looked at the data and, if necessary, made adjustments or reacted to it in some way?
Okay.
Similarly, when they talk to patients, you know, who are being served or individuals who are being served by the organization, they'll ask them those questions. You know, how does the organization measure your progress? Has anybody explained this to you? Can you talk to me about, you know, whether your clinician has talked to you about your responses on those instruments? I would also expect, again, as we go forward, that a surveyor may ask an organization to identify some cases that we're not showing expected progress, that were sort of in jeopardy of treatment failure, cases that weren't going well. And what do they do about that? Again, if the instrument data is being used on a regular basis and it's being used by the organization to improve the quality of care, then there should be a fairly straightforward way to identify cases that aren't going well. And I would want to know, if I was a surveyor, what did you do in response to this? Did you bring it up at treatment team? Is this something that supervision has focused on? How is the organization putting that data to use? This is really not so much an exercise in data collection and measurement as it is in the use of data.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's really helpful. It looks like a graduated approach, you know, as we begin to collect the data, and then as the year progresses, the expectations will be a little bit higher for the use
of data. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Okay, good. Okay, other questions for Scott? Okay, I imagine, Scott, you put the resources in your last slide, and I imagine that you are also a resource. can people
feel free.
Also? Okay, all right, good. Good. I didn't mean to put you on the spot, but
that's great. Perfectly okay. If somebody has a question offline, feel free to give me a call or send me an email.
Great. Okay, wonderful. And, let me just give people another little minute or two to a few seconds to think about other questions. Okay, I just have a comment. I think one of the things that was a little surprising to us was that beginning of treatment and end of treatment scales are not acceptable. I mean, it makes sense what you're saying because you want to make the changes for the client during treatment, and you wouldn't know that until discharge. But many of us are using tools like that already, so we just have to think about other instruments that can give us the feedback on a more regular basis.
Yeah, and depending on the kind of instrument that you're currently using, contact the instrument developer. It may be that instrument has been tested or used as a repeated measure,
okay.
as a measure which is used as appropriate for use in measurement-based care, but you haven't been using it that way. You've simply been using it as,
right.
you know, intake and discharge.
Mm-hmm. Okay, good. That's a good recommendation. All right. Well, I've got, they're very quiet today. I think we're just taking in all the information. So I really appreciate, your presentation and the information that you gave us today. I think it's very, it's very clear what the Joint Commission is asking, and we just need to, make it happen. So thanks again.
You bet. Glad I could help.
Okay. We'll talk to you soon, maybe. All right. Well, thank
okay.
you. And we're going to go on with the rest of the meeting, so you're free to go on to whatever is next on your
okay.
agenda. Okay. Thank
you. Much.
Mm-hmm.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
I'll go ahead and stop the recording.
Okay. Thanks, Kimberly. Okay.